DJ Profile. In the house. Made it then.
Made it.
It's the blueprint. I think this is episode 9. Okay, so the blueprint, as you all know, I started it a good few years ago when I was on Radar. We had a little short break. I'm now with my Thames Delta family, and we're back every Tuesday between 1 and 3, talking to some of the pioneers of jungle drum and bass and the early days and the early heads. And I'm just going to, you know, you're in my, I should have brought my book for you, bro.
Oh, you forgot. I need to get a copy of that.
Yeah. We'll link anyway, because I wanted to get some more music from you. Let's go back, Cliver, to the early days of Black Market. Me, Clarky, Nikki, obviously, and then Ash Attack, Super Sub.
Yeah.
Then Miss Pink come. I don't know if you come before or after.
I was before.
Right. And then there was Roger.
Yeah.
Crazy Legs. Yeah. He was a little bit part-time as well. Tell us what year you came into Black Market. And that was a link through who? Nick?
Yeah, Nick. I think it was... Oh, it was good early years, because I think I was there like 94 times I came.
94, yeah.
95. Yeah. And then I moved upstairs, didn't I?
Yeah.
With Dave.
Yeah, you was working
right up until about. Yeah. I think I left the whole shop about 2001,
right?
Something like that.
So but you had moved a good out of the 6, 7 years.
I moved out of the shop about 9. About
so you was doing. You was working with Dave upstairs in the office. Yeah.
So I learned a lot about the labels and stuff because he was
running
labels.
Zulu.
Yeah.
If you don't know Zulu Records, Dave Piccioni was championing that, and that was a massive.
Yeah, label. It was massive house label, big. Big house
one
label.
Of the biggest independent labels, Booker T.
Yeah, because they were defected, was across the road.
That's right.
And they were like sort of the rivals, could say, at the time.
Yeah.
So how
did you get into jungle drum and bass? And you were on call on the early days as well.
Yeah. So the early days, I think a friend at school kind of like, this is more like the hardcore days when I was going to school, like a friend just had a Pressure X. Yeah, like, and he lived locally. I lived around all the guys that were on court at the time, and everyone was into sort of like hardcore jungle. So it was just getting drip fed to me from them guys. And then someone at school had like a tape and listened to the tape, and I just got into it. And then my cousin took me to my first rave in, I think it was West London, like a warehouse rave. And I just kind of just got into it from there. But then just growing up, grew around Brocky, Det. Like all like Pressure Rec, all the old Cool FM guys all lived where I lived. So
it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer really, getting into it. But yeah.
And you witnessed, I mean, I think they were probably the best days is when I managed to get the residency for us because I knew Mr. C at the end. Mm. And that was something special.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember that night when me and Nikki played? I think, out of a lot, I mean, there's so many nights that you play at, but I would say that night that we played for, I think it was a hardware night, and it was an old school thing, and me and Nikki played for 2 hours, and we just shelled it in there. Do you remember that night?
Yeah.
And every tune we played, the place was got. We had to wheel up the tune.
It's good vibes though, because the layout of the end was like the DJ booth was in the middle of the rave, and then everyone was just around
it. Yeah.
So the atmosphere was just like
electric.
You could see the DJ. You could hold
his hand. It was that. But whoever designed
it felt like he was DJing with. The rave in the DJ booth because he was just surrounded by everybody.
Yeah. And so it was all round to the back. Yeah. So it was everything.
Yeah. It had this little dark corners and back in the day, that was a thing where the little gangmans would be in the corner and the ravers would be right up in the front, and it was just like such a melting pot of people. It just created a good atmosphere for everybody.
Yeah. I think that was one of the highlights of the Black Market nights. Mm. And what was it like working in the shop, Cliver?
Oh, it was just fun. It was so much fun. It's like, I think it's the only place I've ever worked where I just like looked forward to working.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you get up and you're just happy to go and work there because every day you
jokes.
You never know who you'd meet.
Yeah,
like you'd meet everyone from the like the biggest DJ to the like smallest during the day, and just people just come and hang out, and it was just like, yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good learning experience for me anyway, definitely. Yeah. For yeah. All the different types of drum and bass there was at the time, and then all the different DJs, and just yeah, it was
when
good
did
fun.
You, when did you get your first break? What was the first rave that you played at?
I think the first big one, because I'd done like loads of little parties. There was like loads of small community little things that I did with all the guys that were up and coming at the time. And then the first big party, I think, was Jungle Mania. When Lee, remember Lee that used to work in the
yeah,
shop?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Because he was wasn't he doing stuff for Funky as
yeah,
well?
He was working for Funky, and he must have put me forward to like warm up. And I think that was the first biggest rave. That was at the island, Ilford.
Wow. That was a good venue.
That was the first big proper rave that I'd done. And that was like, that was an experience. That was the night that guy got shot outside.
That me and
the security.
That's right, because me and Pedro were standing outside. Yeah. And then when we went home, we saw it on the news. Yeah. We were like, but yeah, we were just standing there yeah, talking to the geezer.
That was
and then
crazy.
He came back and yeah, sprayed the door.
Yeah, yeah. So that was like,
Them days were kind of dark,
but it was still fun. Do you know what I mean? And from there, I think being in the shop, people just started booking me just from me being in the shop and then being on call. I got on call around that same sort of time. So I had call, and the two biggest sort of things you could be involved with at that time, without being a producer, I was like part of. So it was
Black Market.
Yeah. And cool, yeah.
What, I mean, you've had a chance to have a look at what we do in depth, because I'd be making the tunes, I'd be bringing the dub plates to Black Market, be testing them out. Do you remember you and Clarky? I'd just be, oh, that's a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'd be testing them out in the shop. Like, even the Dread sound and what we were doing,
yeah,
you were getting that early, you were getting the teepees
early. Yeah,
early,
yeah.
And you were able to...
As I was getting bigger, you was giving me, like, started to drip me, feed me the dubs. So it was like...
Come on, Clover.
So when I'm playing out now, they're like, What's that? So yeah, it was always a good thing to have your dubs.
Well, it was a camp thing, because yeah, we looked after our own. You, Clarky, Ash, we were all part of the team. So yeah, so and even you guys, like Ash, when he brought that Deliving tune in,
yeah,
everybody would bring something to the yeah, table, however big or small.
And then my connection with Brocky would be like,
because you were working for Undiluted
yeah,
and doing Undiluted
yeah,
nights.
Well,
as
I
well,
just yeah, so. My that was later on, but the early days when he started up the label, obviously because I knew him, I'd be like, yeah, come bring your like test presses to the shop. So if you wanted an exclusive, anything really, like Undiluted, Conganati, Nicky had the link with Conganati.
We smashed
you had
that
Dread,
link. Well,
so we had the exclusive.
I took, when Congo was there, he was at a couple of different distributors, and I brought them to the different distributors. But if you remember, you could only buy Conganati from Black Market because
yeah,
we were the main...
We were the distribution,
yeah,
basically.
We was basically selling yeah, everything back catalog.
So everyone from around the world would come to Black Market to just get a Conganati exclusive.
Yeah.
So I remember it, like, under the counter, you remember under the counter, you had all the exclusive, and like, they were just one day full, next day
gone,
just completely gone. Even with your stuff, when Chopper, remember, we just, like, lined up with, like, about... about 1,000 copies and gone within like 2 days. It was just like crazy those times.
And wasn't it crazy when people used to bump their head downstairs, go downstairs, and you just couldn't get in
yeah,
because as you played the tune and you put your hand up, it was I'd have one yeah, of them and 20 men and a few girls in the background trying to squeeze in front, because we'd always look after the ladies. We'd say, come in,
yeah,
because you could see people just thinking, oh my God, I'm not even going to get...
You could get into the shop.
Exactly.
This was before when they changed the layout of the shop. It used to be just the two decks.
Yeah, and then they extended it.
Then
and it went around the corner.
Yeah,
bit,
then they
yeah,
extended. Well, they knocked through because they used to have the studio in the back, innit?
Yeah.
It just used to be the... It used to be small, like probably about the size of this studio.
Yeah, and then we
it was really
sort, it, yeah,
small, so you could
was
get...
Was you in the shop that day when the rat attacked Clarky?
No, I wasn't there. I was on it. No, I don't think I was there that
day. Okay. Well, I've got to get Clarky on this because apparently he was downstairs. And well, they were saying that the rat went for his neck. But actually, when I spoke to the rat people,
yeah,
they went, it wasn't. It was because it was panicking.
Oh, right.
And it was trying to get away.
Get away, yeah.
Because obviously the sewers were...
Yeah, because we
which we didn't realise were right behind the wall.
Right in the basement.
Exactly.
We?
So it was... And apparently in London and around London, the old days, there's a massive underground sewers and walkway, which I wasn't too aware of.
I don't know. He was right in the...
He went right in. Do you remember that was that little box tin?
Yeah, there was that little thing underneath.
Oh, I had bear jokes with you lot.
Yeah, that was good days.
What are your fondest memories of Black Market?
Just meeting all the artists throughout the day and just it was just like a rave every day. Every day, like the day would start off slow, wouldn't it? It would always be like chill till about 4 o'clock. So when people finish work, people would always come. A lot of people used to work in West End then time. Yeah. So a lot of people come after work. So between five and seven was like peak time. It was like on a Thursday, people knew that was like Ray's promo day when he'd come with the fresh dread. So everyone would come and we'd get a lot of the test presses and promos.
That was our Thursday. We wanted to make sure that people were getting the best product, and we would always outsource. If something was hot, we would have them all. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Even when the dubstep team came in, it still kind of worked.
Yeah, because we had Sarah, who was a youngster, and they had so all when that extended and it became sort of drum and bass. It became drum and bass and dubstep. Yeah. It was like. You had everyone from like the dubstep scene, and then people coming from.
And that was mad because you had people like Mala, and youngsters people, and who was those two that ended up on Radio 1?
Oh, Benger and Rust, Benger and Scream.
Scream and Benger. Yeah, all of them come downstairs, and they all used to buy music, which was great. We used to get Mala.
Then he had like that's when the Chaser's Status was there, and so it was like it just became like a meeting point for people. People be like, oh.
It was the new music house, I suppose.
Those people came down, didn't even buy records. They were just coming there for business meetings and stuff. And it was like crazy. So,
how have you, I mean, you're like us. You've been a chameleon. You've changed with the times. You were there when it was jungle and when it was jungle raves. Mm. And then it evolved into D&B. It had the bad press for a little while, as all things do. And they link it to badness. And it got hectic for a little while. But then it kind of straightened itself out. Yeah. How have you seen that change in, say, from... you playing records and cutting dub plates. Mm. And you used to go and cut bare dubs for me and Nicky.
Like, I spend the whole day in music house.
And he'd be cutting from bare dats for me and Nicky. And we would bring the plates back. Then you'd be driving for Nicky in the evening.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a unit because we'd be out all weekend.
Yeah, that was my like sort of initiation, innit? Like driving Nicky. But that's where I met everyone in the shop, and then I'll be out on the road or I'll be music house, and then I'll meet more people that wouldn't come to the shop. And then a lot of the artists that was like cutting dubs for other DJs, because it used to work like the old days used to be the producers wouldn't really DJ. You'd have the DJs, you'd have the producers, but the producers would go to music house, cut the dub for another DJ like to play. So like Groove, so that's where I met Groove right in the shop, but he'd be like a music house, Jumping Jack Frost, Brian G, like
Mandy tell us Swift. What that was like, so to describe that to people.
Oh,
like
because you're like trying to get into it, you're just around the people, and they'll just see you regularly down there, so you start talking, oh, what do you do, oh, he's from the shop, and you start networking with people. So
but you lot were really rolling with Leon, because that was more your age group. Mampy, Leon, god rest his soul. And that second room, because we used to go in there.
Yeah, the main room.
Yeah, we had the main room, and Chris Music House would be there, and so it got.
And
so
Paul,
you used to
Chris
go in this, and then Paul put Fu Manchu, he'd be in there, and then they'd have room two, and I'd be, and he'd be like, nah, man, he's all right. Let him cut the dub plate. And I'm like, are you sure? It's my, and then Leon had graduated because he'd watched his dad, he'd watched Chris, and he was getting really good cuts. And in the end, me and Ryder were just slipping through and just going in that side room, getting cut and then leaving.
Yeah.
And some poor people, and you have to excuse us, if you were in the queue and we jumped the queue, I'm sorry, but we jumped the queue because we had shit to do. That was an amazing time. I mean, it's changed. Sometimes I look back our lives and I think we had the best life because it was... We were all parked our cars outside. Yeah. We used to go Las Vegas.
Yeah, Nikki had the shop, what's it, Linda's?
Linda's, we used to go there and we used to go and have our pasta.
Yeah.
Like, that would be our, like, chill-out meeting place where we'd go and eat. Yeah. And then he'd have his cup of tea. And we just lived and breathed the shop.
You'd go sample hunting for your, like, I'll be back in a minute, and then come back with a bag of, like, old records that used to go and get the samples.
Yeah. Because I was an avid sampler.
They had all the shops in Soho, didn't they? All the record shops.
A great thing for me. And I still record shop. I can't help it. I think I was in Leeds a couple of years ago. And, how does it feel? New Order?
It's New Order, yeah.
New Order.
Yeah.
You know that tune?
Yeah, yeah.
Man got a white label of it. Like, I saw it in this shop and I was like, what? And it was 25 quid, test press, promo. And I was like, yeah. You know who produced that tune? And this is how mad it is. Quincy Jones produced that tune.
I didn't know that.
So what I'm saying to you is electronic music, as far back as you can go, has always been the underdog.
Yeah.
But then it's become mainstream. It's funny, I turned on Radio 1 the other day and it's Bear Trap and grime where that wasn't the case 4 or 5 years ago.
Nah, it's always popular, isn't it? What's popular?
What the kids listen to. Just
because drum and bass at a point was...
Jungle, drum and bass,
on Radio 1 constantly for like the sort of... late 90s, I would say
late 90s where they embraced it. Then Fabian Groove Rider were on there for about 10 years and then you had One in the Jungle that was the pilot kind of show that they would have different guests.
I think that was the start of before One Extra split off and then
my good friend Rachel because then she went off to do that and then Flight and Bailey were resident over there. Oh, and L Double.
Yeah, L Double. There was a few that they had over there as residents. I mean, they still had Fabian Groove Rider as the main drum bass show.
Another venue I wanted to talk about was Fabric, because when we were resident and when I was on a Groove Connection, we were the first DJs to go in there. And as well as the end, that became the two bouncing points in London. It was either Fabric or it was the end. And we had some amazing nights because I think I'd done some Dread Nights there two or three Dread Nights there that we've done with Sean, bless him. I hope he's getting on all right because I heard that he had cancer and that they were trying to raise some money.
Yeah.
Did you go to that gig?
I didn't go to the gig, but I spoke to him on Instagram and I think he raised the money before the gig
really for the operation.
We all shared it and stuff and
brilliant.
I think he raised on a Just Giving page and it raised more than the money he needed and I think he said he was going to donate the rest to charity.
Brilliant.
So I think he's gone to Germany to have the operation
But, he was there for a long long time and I was resident there with the Groove Connection lot. Sean, wherever you are, lots of love, mate, and we'll have to get him on the show because I bet he's got some stories to tell. There's a few other things I wanted to talk about. Yeah, the transition, first of all, the transition from records, cutting dub plates to then the CD to then the digital age. How did that affect you and how did you embrace the change?
I went from the vinyl and dub plates to the CD, when the CDJs first come out. I went to that. I didn't really like the change because you couldn't DJ the way you could with vinyl because, vinyl, you can go to any point in the track and double drop and do the... I was into that style of mixing and you couldn't really... DJ the way you could with vinyl until I discovered Record Box through Ed Rush. I see Ed Rush playing a Fabric, and I see on the machine, I see all the waveforms and everything. And I'm like, what's that? He's like, Record Box, you need to check it out. It's sick. So I checked it out, and then I see you could cue point, like basically play like you're playing vinyl. When I discovered that, I just got rid of the... So I've been on USBs from, I think, 2012, 2013. So pretty early on.
Yeah, me and Nicky were super late on
Yeah,
that.
Pretty early on.
We were carrying them dub plates still right till the bitter end.
Because I think he see me somewhere, and he's like, where's your records? I'm like... I just said in my pocket. He goes, what do you mean? So I use USB now. He goes, USB? What do you mean? I goes, yeah, Record Box, man. You need to... And you know that whole thing where people are like, oh, you're not a DJ if you play off... You don't play on vinyl. And I said, nah, man. Mate, I've been for years travelling the world, paying extra money for the dub plates.
You remember?
Records not turning up. You go to America and, like, your records don't turn up. So you're like, you can't do the gig. And, like, just I've had so many mad... episodes with that, so yeah, it was a definite change, the way you're carrying all them records in your bag.
I think I was at one gig and every bloody record jumped and it was skipping across the team.
Yeah, that as well.
And I was like, this is making me look bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's not
and
me.
And you're upset and then people think you're angry, but it's just like just, nothing's going right, and it's just
exactly. So then I just looked at it, and I think I saw Maller a little while after that at hospital, and his whole set just skipped, and I was like, Bridging, you need to have a backup plan because we can't go on like this.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying the Serato thing for a short period of time.
Yeah, I see Ryder using that. I'm not really convinced with that. I prefer the whole. I mean, when I play on the deck, the CDJs now, it's like playing on the decks because you queue up, let it go, and you just get used to it. I'm used to it. Before, I was a little bit hesitant, you know what I mean, on what was going on. So that was the physical change. What about the music? How did you embrace the new sound? So i.e. Serum, Blade Runner, Voltage, they were stroke, analog, digital, but these were the new kids on the block.
I think it was just from, because I started, like, I'm pigeonholed into that whole jump up thing, which is, like, I've been into it from the, I reckon, like, 2005, when Hazard started making those, like, real energetic kind of tracks. And, I mean, there was jump up before that, but, you know, like, Aphrodite, that kind of energetic kind of tunes. Yeah. And, I just kind of just followed, just, tunes that had a good groove. I'm into like what's got a good groove, whether it's Jump Up, Rollers, Jungle. It's so it's got a good
tell
groove.
Tell them, Clover. Yeah. Tell them.
It's got a good groove. It's like.
And this is the problem of I think what I see in a lot of young DJs is one, they don't look up. They're not paying attention to the floor, because the floor is dictates.
Yeah, I think that's personally more to do with. I think a lot of the DJs now are producers.
Yeah.
They've come into the game
as producers and not DJs,
and then promoters will book them because they're popular and then they're not got experience as a DJ.
To me, if you don't earn your stripes at some point, you're going to basically undermine yourself further down the line, because I see a lot of, when we had the lockdown, I see a lot of online DJs that were doing really well DJing from online and on their, but when you see them live, it's a totally different ball game. Yeah. It's like there's a difference. And on last Friday, my daughter, I put her on first, and she had a couple mistakes where she played an MP3. It was really low.
Yeah,
she played a WAV, and then she went, but she learned because I threw her in on the deep end. And I think that you only learn some of it when you're on the job.
Well, I mean, Nikki's daughter's DJing now, and she's doing really well. You know, so I mean, she knows the music. She knows, but she's got her own.
Well, she was she was going out raving as well.
Going out raving before. She's got her own take on it as well. Which
exactly, just like my daughter. My daughter was drawing my own tunes on me. I was like, what? And I ain't even played some of them tunes, Clive. I was like, what? But also, she plays trap, grime. Yeah. She plays house. So she's got a different take, and that's why she's called Low Selector, because she can do different sets.
Yeah.
But I'm just... And it was nice to see that, you know, she played You Got Me Burning Up. I remember when I made that remix with Gavin 30 years ago. I mean, you remember things like Voodoo, playing at...
Voodoo Magic,
and then Orange queuing up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going right the way through till 12,
yeah,
or four o'clock in the afternoon. Those were incredible times.
I mean, back then, because I was speaking to someone about it the other day, and I was like, back in the day, you had raves like every day of the week. It was literally a 7-day, and I'm thinking, and people went to work, but they would go out like on a Wednesday night. You had Swerve, Thursday you had Bar Rumba. Tuesday you had something else. Monday and Monday Club. Sunday you had Thunder and Joy. And then the weekend would be the weekend. Like, yeah, the really big raves on the Friday and Saturday. But from Sunday to Thursday would be like small little club nights, which you don't have anymore. Like, you know, you have the student events, but they're every...
The turnover of people as well seems to be quick. And also because of the pandemic in the last 2-3 years, that's put a real hold on things. And obviously changed the perception of dancing.
Yeah.
How did you deal with the pandemic?
Like, well, just I think it was I could see it coming, but I didn't know how long for. I thought it was going to be for a few weeks. So, you know, like the first few weeks, you just kind of like, well, this is a nice rest time now. Spend time with family and chill out, see friends that you don't usually get to see on the weekends. Then it became... As it got longer and longer, you're like, well, what do I do now? And then, I mean, I got into like just doing streams from home just to keep me kind of occupied. And then, I mean, I was always producing, but then I fully like threw myself into the production and just said, I'm going to just keep writing tunes of what comes out of it. Like the stuff, I think I went a bit more deeper than what I was making, because I was making more just like for my DJ sets. Whereas more I could be, I'm not playing out, so I can experiment a bit more and go into different
avenues. Well, I think it's a confidence thing, because a couple of things you sent me lately, I've been hammering, haven't I? Do you know what I mean? So that you kind of
you feel think more out confident. Of the box. And you think, more. Oh, I'm going to go. I'm not making it now just for me. I'm just making broadening my sort of options.
So that kept your mental health going. And then what was it like? Me and Nikki did a lot of these kind of like sit down raves.
Yeah.
Which at first was a bit soul destroying but we were just happy to be out.
Yeah. I think
I was just happy to see people.
Yeah, happy to see people. But then when they were like, the security is telling them to
sit down. And it's like, imagine that in 20 years' time when we're saying we went through a pandemic and people were sitting down raving. People would be like, what? But I was lucky. Should I be saying this? I won't mention any venues. But right at the end, they let everyone stand up for 5-10 minutes.
One or two that were like...
And that was banging. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, the energy in the room.
Yeah.
And even the energy in the room... we did our party Blueprint Friday at E1. I want to thank all the artists and DJs that turned up over there. It was, let me tell you, the vibes in there was one of the best I've seen. Every DJ that played, they had a really good set. Do you know what I mean? So we give thanks for that. I wanted to ask you, we can't come out of the pandemic now. We had this mad rush from July to December of like squeezing in as many.
Oh, yeah, because I mean, we had the sit down raves, then we went back into lockdown again.
Yes.
And then we was like, right. Then they were saying, we're going to come out of it at the other end, but we didn't know when. That was like 4, 5, maybe 6 months.
Mm.
So I was just writing. Then there was the promise of, oh, it's going to happen. We're going to go back to normal. In May, and then that didn't happen, and it went to June. I think it was June or July, June. It was just full on. I mean, I haven't been so busy in about 5-6 years. Like, it was just every week, something. Week in, week out, 5-6 gigs a week. It was just like fulfilling. You have to cancel some because you're like, oh, I can't do this one now, or it was too much. But it was so much fun. It was just like just being back on the road again. And yeah, and then just testing out all the music as well, which was fun.
Who I know you've done. There's a couple other things I wanted to mention. If you've just joined us, this is The Blueprint, and we basically every Tuesday invite guests on when we can get hold of them, and we talk about the old days. We talk about the foundation. Clive DJ Profile is one of the foundations of Black Market, also Cool FM, and one of the early Utes coming through, because you were coming through the same time as Kane. Mampy Swift.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was your kind of era, yeah, like Mampy of Swift, DJs. What other DJs?
Andy was kind of big-ish around. He was like, you know, like not what he is now, but I mean, he was popular because he had big tunes then. Mampy Swift, Logan D.
Big up Logan D, Mickey Finn's
son. Had, who else did you have around that time? There was so many. Because everyone, it's the same. Everyone just kind of came and just became big. And then some people left the scene. They got big and then they just left, disappeared. So I'm trying to think of the names around that time. Yeah, those were the main ones, really.
Yeah, like, that graduated.
Yeah, graduated from that era and then everyone else came in later on.
What let's talk about a couple of tours that you went on. I think just before lockdown, it was you, Fat Man D, and Nicky Black Market.
Yeah, we've done America.
Was that 2018? 2019?
19. And how was that? Yeah, that was a busy year. Because we started the 360, which is me, Nicky Black Market, and Fat Man D as a sort of collective. You know, like people getting into making collectives for the festivals and stuff. And we started that in 2018. We had like a lot of shows. We've done NAS Festival. We've done like West Fest and all the big parties, and then we done a tour the US 2019, just before the pandemic, and yeah, that was crazy. It was so funny because I've always been used to going to America by myself, and then you meet up with people as you on the tour, but to travel with someone along it, and Licky is just the craziest person. Like his habits are so funny. Like he loves his tea, and he's like got his bag of tea because he's like, no, American tea is no good. Like got to have the British tea, and then like every guy that we went to, he's like, can I just have a cup of hot water? And then give him a tea bag. And be like, make sure you put the tea in.
And he's just what was he drinking? Fiji tip?
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, he's brought it bag, his little bag with him everywhere we went. Like, and he make sure you put the tea in first. And they're like looking at him like,
what? Where did he go?
We've done New York, we've done LA, we've done Orlando. We done, what else we done? San Diego and Puerto Rico. We done a mini tour. I think we went for 10 days. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Anything going with Nicky is fun.
Yeah, and then we met up with, what's his name? Morris in LA, because that's like,
MCMC, yeah.
And met up with, Rap was there, because she was still living in LA at the time.
Okay.
So she came to the party. And then a lot of who else was out there? There was a few people was out there at the time and came to the party in LA. That was pretty good. And the New York party was pretty.
Where's your you got family out there?
Well, they were in New York, and then my uncle moved to Florida, but I didn't get to see him because it was like more I think the more north of Florida. We was in Orlando, which is like kind of in the middle. So yeah, but I always go and check them when I can.
Cool. I wanted to also ask you, what has been, who's influenced you as a DJ and who's influenced you as an artist?
As a producer.
Yeah.
Let's
go back. Let's go back to the producer days of 94. 95, 96, because that would have been the foundation. So
early ones, Dillinger, probably the main one. Because just what he was making at the time, and then your stuff, because it was just massive at the time. It was massive because you, from before the Dread times, when you was doing all those remixes, you've done a lot of remixes,
yeah,
isn't it?
94, yeah. 95, yeah. Do you know what? I just wanted to make simple, good. Yeah. It was very simple what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't complicated, yeah, just that, but it always worked.
Well, that piece wasn't really, it wasn't really a thing, was it?
No.
That sound. The sound wasn't really a
we
thing.
We pioneered that.
Because everyone was 808s. Breaks at 808s, and you had the like sort of now you get that's when the music started getting a bit more experimental. Do you know what I mean? Because it was quite simple. It was just like ragga samples, little jungle, a little break from old break records and an 808. And then it started getting a bit more synthesizers, and people were getting a bit more on into the production.
Yeah.
So that's when I think about, I'd say like 97 was the era when the music was like, it was
proper. Well, that's when Ed Rush and Optical came in with a new vision.
New sound.
Yeah, Trey Spears, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Even in the book, and it's mad, like my co-writer, bigging up my co-writer, Dave Jenkins. When we were writing and documenting the whole thing, it seems that every two to four years, there's a huge change.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, I mean, you think about it. 94, we were playing in the raves, and they were already calling 89 old school.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
But it was then. But it wasn't. Back then it was like back to 89.
And even in 89, so 89, Summer of Love. Mm. Not fast forward to 92, which was still kind of the end of the house era. Sort of, but that's when we kind of come in, and then 92 to 94, and then at 94 they were going 88 to 92 is old school, and now we're in jungle, and then from 94 to 97. Yeah, that was probably, I would say, you had Hardcore Jungle 92, and then and things like House Crew, Euphoria, and then 93, 94, you had the Reinforce, you had Paul Ibiza, you had Kemet, you had all the other independent suburban bass, Moving Shadow, and we were all part of that. And then come 97, you had...
Well, that's what Heads, Metalheads...
Metalheads and Metalheads V and Ed Rush and Optical. Yeah,
because they were so different from each other.
Yeah.
And they had their own following. Yes. Like people literally were fans of that and only would go to that because they had their own nights back then as well.
Yeah.
And people would just...
Planet V and Heads.
People would just go to those specific nights.
And then obviously the 2000s it changed again. I think around 2001, 2002.
That's when Bad Companies. And...
Yeah, but I had a big hit then because then I was like, I had something out there.
Yeah.
So again, it was going against the grain.
Yeah. That's when, because you had the was it Danny C?
So Danny C, Bad Company, Dillinger.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there was loads. There was Boy Meringue around at that time.
He was different as well.
That's when Ryder had all them guys doing and Prototypes was like...
Banging.
They come in and separated off again and it was just like... There were so many strong labels at that time. And then Ram was strong at that time. Then Brocky came with his sort of
Undiluted.
Own
Ed
sounds.
Solo. Yeah.
And then, it was a good era for music because everyone was just... That's what everyone just sort of... Yeah, I'm doing my thing now. And that was it, rather than... I think that's when the scene started being... Everyone was like camps. And everyone went into their individual camps rather than it's just one scene.
Yeah, I think it was... It started to kind of... Well, everyone was rowing their own ship.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Then,
but it was still crossover.
You would discover someone new and he would just come with you and then someone else would discover
you. I mean, when I pulled in Blade and Serum, then they went over to V and then they went off and done their own thing after that. But then there was that crossover. Picking up everybody in the feed, I haven't been even looking like who's in the feed right now, but we've got about 100 people. If you've just joined us, it's The Blueprint. It's DJ Profile, our special guest today. Look at the time, Clivert. It's 1:43 already.
We've got so much stories. We could talk for hours.
give me some really... We're not exposing you, Nicky Black Market, but just give us some funny stories. Were you in the car when Von was sick?
I was like, I think I was with you that night. And he's holding...
Because Clive's driven for me as well, many a time. Me and Nicky have shared him because it is... it's tough.
It's
People
tiring.
Think it's glamorous.
Yeah.
Tell them, Clive.
Nah, it's the nights...
Tell them, Clive.
The nights on the road, it's like... It's long nights. It's You spend more hours on the road than you do in the clubs. You know, when you got somewhere really far, especially Nicky, that takes on 90 gigs. You're spending like 12 hours on the road just driving. I'm like, crazy, you know. He still does it now.
But he's happy doing it.
He's happy doing it.
So I can't knock him for doing it. I worry about him being on the road for that long. Were you at the night when God Rest His Soul, Stevie Hyper D, we was in Manchester, and Nicky Black Market was there. I'm sure you was there, Clive.
I think I was there.
Right, and then basically it was in that club.
The Lighthouse.
No, it had barbed wire in.
The Lighthouse, it was called.
Was that it?
That was the Lighthouse. That you played, that was Sankey's.
Sankey's.
Yeah.
So we went to Sankey's, right, and then Nicky Black Market's on the decks like this, you know, with obviously one of the kings of jungle, Stevie Hyper D, and the place is going crazy, right? And I thought, okay, that old chestnut, here we go. And I just done Dirty Chopper.
Yeah.
And I just mixed it into Nicky's tune. And the way I had a fag in my mouth, obviously, or it could have been even a spliff back then, I don't know. And the way I was bringing it in with the Reese, and the place went absolutely mad. Now, by this time, Nicky's got his coat on. Hyper said goodbye.
Yeah.
Everyone's leaving. I do this mix, and he comes straight back on in the dance. And then I think I must have rewinded the tune 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And actually, Randall, we love you. Big up to Randall, Too Hot to Handle. He's one of the first guys I gave that dub plate to, and he used to mix it. Yeah. You know how his mixing was. And that was one of my, and that was just a moment, I'm getting goosebumps now, when you just look at it and you look at the crowd, and it was that underground sound, that vibe.
Yeah.
Because we were ghetto DJs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Me, Nicky, Randall, Kenny, Brian Frost, Groove Fab, Randall, we'd all go to them ghetto places.
Brian and Brocky as well.
Yeah. And Brocky, all of us. Because we would only turn up with one man with us or turn up by ourselves because we wouldn't be intimidated.
Yeah.
And then man would open us with open
Birmingham,
arms.
Birmingham, Nottingham.
All of them Midlands. gun places.
Wolverhampton, like, they were like dark.
Liverpool, yeah, Topstuff.
They were dark, you know, times.
Even London, when you go Brixton. I remember going to Cole Harbour Lane with Groove Rider, and we went to go and get 2-piece chicken, and he went, "Ricky, put your chest down, man. You're all right with me, yeah?" I was like, what? I was ready. I was like, and that Cole Harbour Lane, I know they've left that man there with no shoes. Do you know what I'm saying? So I was like, this looks a bit dodgy to me, Ryder. And he was like, "You're right." But we weren't intimidated because we loved the music.
Yeah.
And we wanted to play. And that night, there's so many nights like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like when we used to go Camden Palace and we used to play for Orange. Mm. Again, those were the good old days, as we say. How would you sum up the legacy of jungle drum and bass?
It's still going. So it's always the good thing about this music, because you compare it to like dubstep and like the times where a lot of the people have got big in garage came from the early jungle. A lot of people that got big in dubstep came from D&B. So it's like
they went off to do sub-genres, didn't they?
Because they took the influence of their music into, but our music always stayed. And then like people have gone to come back. Do you know what I mean? Because it's still a passion. There's still a passion for this music with a lot of people. Do you know what I mean? Whether you're 14, 15, getting into it to like 40, 50, just not raving anymore, but you still cheekily have a little mix at home, or, you know, you go to one rave a year. It's still a passion between such a wide audience in terms of
it
age.
It appeals to everybody because it's got all of those flavours.
And you can go to a rave and see 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds and 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds mixing, do you know what I mean? And just enjoying the music. And that's what it's about. It's about...
Yeah, it doesn't matter what gender, colour. That's the other thing that we don't give props to, is this music has broken down a lot of boundaries.
Yeah, that as well, because the early days was like... You know, the races, there was a, you didn't feel.
It didn't matter what colour or gender you was. It didn't matter if you was a lawyer or if you worked in a garage or if you were sweeping the roads or if you were unemployed. You'd all be raving as pals, having a smoke, having a drink.
And it was a culture. It was a thing where it was a massive thing, and people made lifelong friendships out of being, you know, where did you meet? Oh, I met in a rave 20 years ago and you're still best mates. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of the people I know is through music. So a lot of friendships are through music. So.
Of course, 100%. Going back to sticking it on you, Go on, give us something that happened funny with Nick that's been crazy that you just killed yourself, either at football or on the road.
There's so many on the road. I'm trying to think. Oh, I don't know if I should tell the story where one time we had to like sort of, it was like an event that Nicky done. And do you remember my pal Elford, the big shoulders that used to...
Yeah, Elford, yeah.
That come out and it was me, him... Nicky, I think it was us four, maybe Ian might have come.
Ian used to drive.
And those days, it's not like now where you agents and everything. Everything was like self-done in it. You like deal with people direct. And this kid must have done a party. I think it was like Kent or something like that. I can't even remember. And we've done the gig and Nicky's like, yeah, you know. He's oh, I can't pay you. I ain't got the money. He's like, I've never seen Nicky get, you know, Nicky's a lovely guy. I see him like that. You know, when he goes like that, getting angry, he's like, what do you mean? He goes, no, you better get my money now. And we literally took the guy, he goes like, right, I'm taking your records. This is like, yeah, because it was like vinyl times. He's like, I'm taking your records. You better get my money and all that. So we took the guy's records, put him in the car. And he's like, oh, we took him to his house. And I think, because he's like young, starting out promoter. And he said, you're not getting your records back. He goes, oh, I've got to go and speak to my parents. The guy had to go and get his mum and dad to pay Nicky to get his records, to release his records. And he was like all in the back, like with our big coats on, like security. And he was like, he was shitting himself. And in the end, I think his dad came out. And
yeah,
said,
but sometimes
I really
had to do that, Clive, because people don't realise that you've got mortgages to pay, mouths to feed.
Yeah, he was like, not having it. And that was a funny story because the way it happened, I know it sounds bad for the kids, but. That's
yeah, but at the end
was.
Of the day, you shouldn't be, you know, you should be doing grown-up stuff and taking, if you're taking people's money on the door, you need to pay them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's simple.
And I think that was a period of time where a lot of kids started doing parties and they didn't
and
have the real,
people
yeah, didn't
and
have
not,
the money.
Yeah. I've had that myself. I've been in a couple of places and I've been with my mate Andy Pandy and the geezer's talking to me about no money and I've just had to say, Andy, close the door, will you, mate? And he looks at me as if to say, oh, not that old chestnut. But, you know, we negotiate, you know what I mean? But it's not
I think
nice
it's coming from the jungle times because...
Yeah, because
you
people
are
just
then,
knocking us,
yeah,
bro. People don't realise, oh, yeah, you know. But you don't know how you had to get that
and
dough.
And you used to get into, like, confrontation with people because... Sometimes it used to be gangmans putting on the raves and if they're telling you ain't paid
tell
you,
a man, where's
and you
my
have
been
arguing, they're like,
exactly.
Right, yeah, you know what? And then sometimes you have to think, oh, well, I'm not going to get in that situation. And sometimes you think, nah,
well, you do,
I'm not having it. But.
Sometimes you've got to wait up, Clive.
You've got
to look at the exit door. Yeah. Can I get out in time? Yeah. And can I get my dough all right? And
how
am
many,
I going to be unscathed?
How many mans has he got and how many mans have I got?
Exactly.
That used to be the scenario. So
there's been some mad times where I've been with Brian and Frost and it's just been madness.
And I always say to like the youngers that are with me now, I say, look, it's such a different time now, like because now you politically can't say things and you can't do this and you can't do that. So a lot of people try and get away with a lot of things now. And I said, you go back to like 20 years ago, I'm like, that wouldn't be happening. So
and a few times we've had to march people to the hole in the wall. But, you know, you've got your mortgage to pay the next day and it is, unfortunately, a very unreliable source in the early days. Until now, it's contracted. You've got
I mean,
agents.
It's all like a business now, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's more of a business. But
back then it was everything was ghetto, innit? No one had, like... accounts and it was all cash and it was just so like
well you were just learning your way and then up until you know you got to look at the lights of SS early days that turned it into a business that you kind of looked at it and you went actually you know what this is viable.
I mean like well RAM
and RAM and all of it and then we all became viable and we made it we made being self-employed and we made the years of Thatcherism fruitful for ourselves because we was like, you know what? We can be our own kings and we can be in charge of our
and
own
and it was
destiny.
Good because a lot of people at that time wasn't really, a lot of them didn't finish school, a lot of them weren't really highly educated, but we became business people, do you know what I mean? From just the music. which it saved a lot of people's lives. Listen, do you know what I mean?
100%. It saved my life. I'm grateful for every day because God knows what men would have been doing and probably ending up like a lot of my pals. Because I don't judge people in the shoes they walk because they have to live that life.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? As we all know, it's tough out there. Do you know what I mean? It's not easy. Who would you like to thank along your journey who really lifted you up and helped you and pushed you forward and gave you your breaks?
There's so many people along the journey. Obviously, you, Nikki, the first ones through Black Market, then like Phil, Cool FM, Brocky always helped me like along the way, especially with giving me like opportunities with the label. There's so many people along the way. And then all the artists that I met along the way to now, do you know what I mean? That helped push me and kind of give me new inspiration, and because you got to keep it fresh all the time, do you know what I mean? To kind of stay relevant.
Current. Yeah.
And all the new artists that come in and make it, do you know what I mean?
Bang.
Keep me interested in it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Where did you get the name Profile from?
You know what? I think at the time, you know, back in the day, it was just like...
Was it to do with MySpace?
Nah, it was way before that. It was like... It was off an old... I think I was just looking for a name to just mix, to do a mix. I wanted to do a mix. And I just thought... I found there was a record. Remember the old house label, Profile?
Yeah. Oh, what? Played hip-hop?
Yeah,
hip-hop and stuff. Yeah.
Really? At the time, my cousin, he was in New York. He
that was a massive hip-hop label,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, he was into, like, DJing and stuff. And I wanted to mix it, make a tape it is. And I was like, I need a name. What can I think of? And that was just the first thing that just looking at me, for Profile. I'll just use that. So I just used that and just stuck with it.
Yeah.
Ever since.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, some people use their second name or their nickname or whatever. But yeah, just stuck with it.
And before we go into the mix, I wanted to talk about the current situation of what you're doing.
Mm.
You got the label.
Mm-hmm. Octave, yeah.
How did you get the name for Octave?
Well, I started it because obviously I was working with Undiluted and I was trying to think of a sister label that I had a bit more say in what went on it and stuff. And I was trying to think of names. And then the reason why I thought Octave was the scale of the keyboard. So I was thinking, I don't want to just release one style of drum and bass. I want to release the whole scale, so that's why I called it Octave. And then just the scale of drum and bass, like all different
flavors.
It's like, because a lot of labels kind of release and stick to one sound and then they build up the audience, but I just love drum and bass, so, and I'm into everything as a DJ, so sometimes a jump up tune will catch my ear, a roller tune will catch my ear, so I always want to release
something.
Do
you remember that tune 172 I'd done on Nikki's cartoons and you used to smash that
tune?
What was I, Dragon Fist or something?
Yeah, you used to make up like all these mad aliases, because you're like, yeah, not Ray Keith, I'm like, you had some funny aliases, I can't even remember.
I had London's Most Wanted, I had Tron, I had Dragon Fist, Dark Soldier. Blimey, I'm sure there was a
few.
There was a few more on there. But otherwise, I'd
Wu-Tang,
be having...
Wu-Tang,
yeah. But the thing was, if otherwise, sometimes I had three or four tunes on the shelf.
Yeah.
And some people, like even that Chronic, they didn't know it was me.
Yeah.
Up until Dizzy Rascal DM'd me when I was on Radar and he was like, did you make these tunes?
Yeah.
He goes, these tunes were my childhood tunes. But we were just banging them out because I didn't...
I think you had because you had your releases or you had like bigger labels and you thought, I can't. I think at the time you couldn't release
too many on my, because I wanted to put
artists. Everyone used to have do that, like just release on under aliases so they could get
Dillinger didn't he? They came on under the label as well. So yeah, tell us about the releases and tell us how many releases you've had and tell us what artists you're looking after and that's coming.
Well, at the moment, I think there's one end of the month with Tessin. And that's going to be the 30th release. I'm pretty like, I think the label's been going for about 5 years, but I just kind of just pace it out rather than just chucking.
All digital?
Yeah, all digital. And just rather than just chucking stuff out, I kind of pace it out, build up the tunes. So a lot of stuff for myself. I've got a lot of European artists as well. Just just mix it up. I've had like from New Elements to Origin to like Turno in the early days. I've had a release with him, and like a lot of the guys when they started out, I kind of just put them in and they seemed to K-Motions. A lot of the guys that are like massive now, I had them in the early sort of days, and yeah, just keeping always bringing in new artists, really, just good music.
I'll tell you what was before we get you on the decks. If you've just joined us, this is The Blueprint. This is DJ Profile, part of Black Market Family, part of Cool, also with his own label, Octave. That was a really good night that me, you, and Nicky done the other day with Batman
Box D. Park, yeah,
and we were doing a three-way.
Yeah,
and it flowed nice.
Yeah,
it was
I've got the set. Yeah, I've got to send it to you actually.
Oh,
yeah.
How long was it?
I think it was just about an hour. Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to use that as a mix, maybe on the show.
Yeah, I'll send it over to you. Yeah.
What's up for you next? What's happening as we come out of this endemic? And as we go back...
Well, I've got a lot of shows coming up with 360. So we've announced at NAS this year. And then we've got a few others, but I don't know if I can say yet because they've not been announced, but they're in the diary. A few big ones with 360. And I've got a few good bookings as well that I can't announce yet. But I think some are getting announced today, so where I'm at. I can say where. Fabric's one of them for someone big.
And, what's your socials?
DJ Profile on the Instagram. DJ Profile UK on Instagram. DJ Profile UK on Facebook. Just DJ Profile on all of the socials.
And what you on? Twitter, Facebook?
Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, all of them. TikTok.
You're going to do a little old school set.
Mix it up with a bit new.
Just so the people... can get a little taste of your history, style and your vibes, a little bit of a history. People, stay tuned. We're not going anywhere. We're just going to get ready and play some music. If you want to plug your USB, Cliver, I want to say thank you very much for coming in at short notice. And I'm looking to get some tunes from you. Let me get your water over here as well.